Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
First issue.
Hello, everybody. Happy pre-Halloween and welcome to another episode of the Talking Comics podcast. It's October 29th, 2019, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day. And you're listening to episode number 414. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this week are Mr. Bob Reier.
I never drink. Vine.
Joey Brichino is here.
Spoopy.
And Sarah Miles.
Happy sort of Halloween.
Sarah, I would like for you to tell us all a story.
Would you like me to tell you a story of how much of an idiot I am?
Tell me the story of Sarah and the Thought Bubble.
So, as many people will have heard me loudly and vociferously complain for a number of months, a very dear friend of mine is getting married on the same weekend as Thought Bubble. So we did a Ladies of Valhalla episode where we talked to Ted Brand and Rose Stein from Crowded. And I was all like, oh, woe is me. I can't come to Thought Bubble and meet you. I have to go to a wedding. And then I was talking to Sweeney Boo at New York Comic Con. And she's like, I'm going to Thought Bubble. And I was like, I can't go to Thought Bubble. I have to go to a wedding. So I went to a hen party this weekend just gone for said wedding. And the bride has got the little countdown thing. And she was like, it's, you know, 20 days, blah, 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 until I get married. And I was like, I'm sure I saw somebody earlier on Twitter that was like, it's 13 days until Thought Bubble. So I checked the dates earlier today. And it turns out I'm not going to a wedding the weekend of Thought Bubble.
Oh, what?
I'm going to a wedding the weekend after Thought Bubble.
Let me ask you this. When you realized it, when you did the math, did you have that moment where like everything around you slows to a crawl as reality dawns and you're just like, what?
Pretty much, yeah. So I live on my own and I literally said out loud, you're a fucking idiot, Sarah. And then I sort of looked around and realized there's no one else in the room. But yeah, and then I instantly went onto Twitter and declared to the world what a prat I am. And then started sending sort of desperate messages to people that I live close to that may be going to Thought Bubble, kind of going, don't suppose you got room in your car for another one? And it turns out that nobody I know who lives near me is going to Thought Bubble, or if they are, they're going up for like a week. So I'm now desperately trying to work out if I can find someone to car share with, or if there's somebody who needs a lift that will give me petrol money, or what I'm going to do. But I've been trying to get to Thought Bubble since probably 2013. When Kelly Sue was there, I've actually got a Captain Marvel trade that Bob very kindly got Kelly Sue to sign for me that says, come to Thought Bubble and we'll high five and shake the world. And I have never made it to Thought Bubble. Never. And one of our listeners, actually, Wesley, commented on my tweet and he was like, oh, I live in Manchester. Is it worth like popping over to Thought Bubble? That's like, for me, it's like a 5-hour drive. For him, it'll probably be like less than an hour. And I basically said, you know, in my experience, Thought Bubble has the reputation for being the friendliest, most welcoming, most open comic book convention in the UK, if not in the world. So yes, it is 100% worth your time going. And now I'm just desperately like putting pins in maps and going, well, if I drive to this place, I can stop there and then I can do. And yeah, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm so stupid. How could I not realize that 9 and 16 are different numbers?
Well,
Only in base 10 math. You never can tell with some of those others.
If you came to this on a really good weekend, it could be either.
So, yeah, there is my tale of why I'm an idiot.
So does it make a difference? Would you have been able to plan for both? Like, you just didn't bother to plan for Thought Bubble because you thought it was the same weekend and that was that?
Yeah, I completely dismissed it because I thought it was the same weekend as the wedding. So I was like, well, I can't go because I can't get up on a Sunday morning after a wedding and drive for 5 hours to get to Leeds to go to this thing for one day. And like, even when we saw like Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, they were like, oh, well, you'll be coming to Thought Bubble, won't you? Because you're based in England. And I was like, no, because my friend's getting married that weekend. And now I'm just like,
oh, you lied to everybody too.
I did. And there were so many people going that I could have like asked for commissions from. And like everyone's commission list is going to be closed now. And I'm so sad and I'm so angry at myself. And like, one of the reasons that I really, really want to go is you can buy a ticket and it's like £28 for the weekend, which is super cheap anyway. But if you go in cosplay, your ticket costs less. And I love that fact. I just think that is such a lovely thing to do. And I even spoke to Tula Lote at New York and got a picture from her. And she basically runs Thought Bubble. And I had a conversation with her about the fact that I couldn't go.
Oh, you could have been in like Flint.
Oh, no, I've been tweeting with her today. And she's like, I really hope you make it. I'm like, I really hope I make it too.
All right, we got to crowdfund this business and get Sarah to Thought Bubble. If anybody listening to the show has some ideas or has some offers or whatever, you know where to get at us.
Anyone have an invisible helicopter, maybe?
Hey.
That would be handy. That would be handy.
I understood that reference. All right, we got... Some lightning rounds. We got all the stuff. We got all the things. Lots of comics to talk about. We should really get to it because, honestly, there is a ton of books on this list. So, without further ado, Mr. Joey Bercino.
What?
Yo! That's what you get for being so quiet this
Surprise!
Whole time. Yeah! I'm paying attention. I'm listening for you. All right, man. I'm going to give you 5 minutes on the clock, but first...
There you go.
Shazam! All
right, my friend, you have 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
Okay, so the first book I'm going to talk about is The Amazing Mary Jane, number one, from Leah Williams and Carlos Gomez with Carlos Lopez. What the heck is this book, even? It's ridiculous. Mary Jane Watson gets her first solo series here. In this book, she's an actress on a set with famed movie director Cage McKnight, and he's hired a bunch of actual bad guys to be the bad guys in the movie. It's so, so weird. Turns out, spoilers here, because this book is ridiculous and I don't care. The director is actually Mysterio, and he's like, oh, I gotta, you know, this could be my life's work, and blah, blah, blah. And Mary Jane's like, whatever, man, I'll help you with this movie. Woo! It's wild. The book is ridiculous. Hey, if you're into the Spider-Man thing, it looks like a Spider-Man book. It feels like one, too. There's some great Peter and Mary Jane moments in this book, too. It's just so ridiculous that I'm like, what? Why? Whatever. It was cool. I had a good time. I also want to talk about Punk Taco, which Melissa tweeted about, a picture of Max reading, which was awesome. It's by Adam Walenta and his 6-year-old son, Makana Walenta. Punk Taco tells the story of intergalactic punk rock band led by Punk Taco is his name, and he's this alien with a taco head.
Yes.
And he plays guitar. It's pretty crazy. I saw Adam Walenta speak at the Hip Hop and Comics panel at Comic-Con, and he was talking about his book, and I spoke with him at Artist Alley, and he was sold out of the book when I walked by his table. And then he tweeted out a couple of days ago that there were only a few left on Amazon. So I was like, forget it. I'm getting one right now. So I got it. Nice. I read it and I loved it. It was so much fun. It's just as ridiculous as you would think with, you know, this giant taco-headed dude who has this, like, galactically famous recipe for nachos that and he gets kidnapped by these squirrels because his nacho recipe could help fuel their whale spaceship that they need to escape the giant Boogar, who's this burger cheeseburger supervillain crazy dude with a French fry mohawk, and he's just trying to make the galaxy great again. So he's that kind of guy. And Punk Taco's like, no man, music and love is what can save the universe, and you know he fights Boogar with music and love, and I'm reading this book and I'm like, is this book about like standing up to bullies and like being a good person and like preaching empathy and like kindness? And then I'm like, that is what this book is about. It ended up being incredible. I loved it so much. I think the story of it is great too, that, you know, it's Adam and his son putting this book together. It is wonderful. It is fantastic for all ages and definitely worth a read. And like I said, Melissa tweeted out a lovely photo of Max reading it over breakfast. And I just think it's really great. And I had a really awesome time with it. There is, should be more Punk Taco coming, especially if we, support it as much as I think, it deserves. It's a really great book. I loved it. He's got a taco for a head and he's eating nachos. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
What cannibalism is that?
I don't know. It's crazy. And there's like a cow, like a bovine-esque alien in his yes. band who eats salads. Like that, like he doesn't eat meat. He eats salads, and Punk Taco's like, I don't want a salad. I want not. It's crazy. I love it. And the last book I want to talk about was Marauders number one. This is another one of the Dawn of X titles, Jerry Dugan, Matteo Loli, and with Federico Blee. This issue is subtitled I'm on a Boat. So mutants now live on Krakoa as a sovereign nation, as we've been talking about for the last few months, and the X-Men are going all around the world, open up these magical Krakoa portals to get mutants to Krakoa. But when everyone's favorite Phaser tries to walk through the portal, thwack, Kitty Pryde smacks her face right into the portal and can't get through. I laughed out loud when she's like, I'll see you guys on the other side. It was hilarious. So what does she do? She hops on a boat and makes her way to the island. Duh. So what essentially spins out of that is, and this is literally the pitch for the book, and I love it, Kate Pryde leads a band of merry mutants around the world to smuggle mutants out of oppressive states via the high seas. There's a lot of Hellfire Company stuff in here with my favorite Emma Frost. There's a great Wolverine bit. Some stealthy Bishop stuff as well. It's so, so much fun. I was not expecting this to be as kind of laugh out loud funny as it ended up being. I love Kitty, or should I say Kate Pryde now. I will say there was some brutal like kneecapping going on at one point. Yeah. She like shoots out a dude's kneecaps. I was like, yo, this is like, she's a grown up now. It's also interesting to see the rebranding of the name Marauders, which was originally linked to Mr. Sinister and the 1980s Mutant Massacre storyline. And the Marauders have kind of come back as these like crazy villains over time. But they're kind of, you know, taking that name back, I guess. Of course, Sinister is still semi-present in the book as well, so we'll see. Everything is wild in the X-World right now, and this is a pirate book, and I love it. The team's great. I think it's really funny. It's really witty, and I just love Kate Pryde as a character, and to have her at the front of it is awesome. And the art's great too. I love this book so much, Marauders. It was my favorite one. X-Men last week with all the Scott Summers dudes walking around. I was like, yeah, this is cool. But Marauders, I was like, this is wild, and I loved it. And that's my lightning round.
Boom. I also read Marauders and loved it. I loved the character chemistry. I really liked kind of the spin on Kitty Pryde that's being delivered in the book. But yo. That fight scene. Can I spoil one thing about that fight scene?
Yeah, dude. So she goes to Russia because Russia is keeping the mutants from entering the portal. Go ahead.
Okay. she goes kind of buck wild with the phasing in this fight that she has against a bunch of these like gun-toting thug soldier dudes or whatever. And at one point, there's a whole bunch of other sweet moves as well. But at one point, she literally takes one of the guns, phases the damn thing through both of their legs near the kneecap, and then just lets it go. And it like reconstitutes inside of their legs. Ooh. I was blown away by that. It's not gory. It's really not. It's not gory at all. Just the idea of it, I was really taken aback. I was like, this is brutal. This is some like John Wick Atomic Blonde stuff going on over here.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. Really like the pirate vibe. It was very funny. It was very funny. I was laughing out loud a couple of times while reading it for sure. And yeah, man, like I've been with you on this X-Men ride for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and it's been fun.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Next week is Excalibur, so I'm also super hyped for that book as well. But it's just been a ride. And hey, man, if we're gonna have more out there books, like, you know, X-Men on the High Seas, like I'm the captain now. It's crazy. I love it. And Punk Taco.
Yeah. I enjoyed Marauders as well, and you mentioned Excalibur. This had a vibe to me that was a cross between the old Claremont Davis Excalibur and that one issue way back of X-Men where we had Nightcrawler dreaming he was a pirate with bamps all over the place. It had a lot of really great character stuff with Storm, Emma. The text pages are hilarious.
Yeah.
The shopping list is just classic stuff. This was wonderful. I don't know that I'm completely back in on the X train yet, but I mean, these last couple of things have been very good.
All aboard, Bob. Come on.
Get on the boat.
Punk Taco, man. That sounds like a good time.
Punk Taco is a good time. And it's so positive and wonderful. And just, it's like, there's a part. Hold on. Let me open up the book. I took so many pictures of like these panels because first of all it's like old school, like, you know, comic booky sci-fi, you know. Mm-hmm.
Anything goes.
Yeah. You know, like the anthropomorphic squirrels give Punk Taco this like magic machine, and he uses it to channel his music into, what does he call, Love Magnified, to defeat the great Boogar. It is incredible.
I love Boogar as a villain name. It's great.
Yeah. It's
well, we can't call him Booger, but we can call him Boogar.
Well, because he's a burger, but he's a booger, you know?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
All makes sense.
He says, love conquers hate. He says, what else does he say? He says, The Boogar has like his classic villain return. Like they think he beat him, and he's like, "Never turn your back on Boogar!" And he like jumps out of the doorway, and he goes, "Yeah." Punk Taco goes, "Yeah. We should never turn our back on festering evil. We should always be willing to fight it and help those in need, no matter what the sacrifice. We can all make a difference." And I'm like, "This is the greatest book ever made."
Oh man. What you're describing is talking comics kryptonite.
Oh, goodness me.
I'm sure Jess talked about reading this ages ago.
I think she did.
Yeah, we saw the guy at New York and we were like, we must go back to his table. And then we went back. He wasn't there. It was one of those like, oh, damn it. I need to read about talking tacos.
Maybe. It came out last year, 2018.
Yeah.
Was that long ago?
First edition, 2018. I don't know when in 2018.
Wow. Is it available digitally?
No.
Oh.
It's kind of self-done.
Yeah, it's like Adam Walenta self-published this thing.
Okay. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. And he's a lovely fellow. I was with Melissa when she was picking that up from Axe, and he just, whatever needed to get done to get Max some books, he was willing to do it. I'll bring him here. I'll mail him this. We'll do this. I'll throw a print or two in. Don't worry. I'm sorry. I'm out of this one. Just lovely fella.
When I went by to ask him if he had any of my copies left, because he was talking about it at the hip hop panel, And I was like, dude, I have to pick up that book. So I went to pick it up the next day. And he was like, no, dude, I'm totally sold out. This is the only copy left. It's like the display copy.
Yeah.
And like, if you come back at like 3 o'clock, I'm going to like raffle this one off. And I was like, oh, dude, I can't come back. I don't have any cap, blah, blah, blah. So when he tweeted that he was like, it's almost sold out on Amazon, I was like, damn, this book is moving. So I made sure to get a copy. Really awesome guy. Great book.
Fantastic. Yeah. That sounds awesome. I'll have to look into picking that up out here. All righty. Who, Bob, why don't you go next?
Okay. <Bob. laughs>
Are you not entertained? All right, you've got 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
First up, two finales. Wonder Woman number 81 is G. Willow Wilson's last issue on this title, and that makes me sad in a number of ways. Through quite a bit of her run, I believe that Ms. Wilson was let down by artwork that, while competent, didn't completely deliver the emotional impact that her story could have. If you also factor in the Year of the Villain shenanigans she had to shoehorn into the last few issues, I'm left feeling that what should have been a special set of issues didn't quite get there. That said, I wholeheartedly thought Ms. Wilson's read on Diana's character was spot on and would look forward to seeing her work on Wonder Woman in the future. Quick aside, the new animated feature film Wonder Woman Bloodlines was only okay, as it's a bit dark and violent, pulling its story from a number of Wonder Woman eras, Greg Rucka's in particular. I'd love if someday we'd get a Diana doing something more Golden Age or George Perez in nature, just saying. The other finale is Fearless number 4, which finished up that miniseries in a wonderfully message-filled and utterly satisfying way. Sean McGuire and Claire Rose campfire song finale was filled with great heart and humor from four of Marvel's leading ladies. There's also a lovely Namora short story by Teenie Howard and Rosie Kampf, a charming look back at Marvel's Golden Silver Age female comics and creators by Trina Robbins and Marguerite Sauvage that had me a bit misty, I gotta say. By the way, this Fearless will be an outstanding trade that would make a great gift for all the young girls or boys in your circle. Aquaman Annual Number 2 by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Vita Ayala, Victor Ibanez, with J. David Ramos on colors, Clayton Cowles on letters, is a book-length tale centered on Festival Night in Arthur's new home of Amnesty Bay. And what superhero shindig would be complete without a party crasher, right? Here, it's the Sea Daddy. and that doesn't quite say everything here. He's a pretty hilarious bad guy. And he's only the beginning of a funny tale that also brings in a ton of heart to this story. We also have a huge little bit with, well, Salty the Sea Dog. Issue is also part of the Year of the Villain shenanigans, but only in its setting. And it's got that doom signal thing hanging in the darkened skies of Amnesty Bay. But quoting here, that's why this is better. Tonight, something is different. Tonight, we come together in peace and friendship in defiance of the darkness. Tomorrow may have darkness still, but perhaps we'll remember tonight and use our gifts in service of one another. Maybe we can each find a way to be a light in the darkness. Amen, Vita and Kelly Sue. Very quickly, Valkyrie, Jane Foster number 4, brings us Talking Winged Horses, Mephisto, the Grim Reaper, and Doctor Strange. Highlight for me, though, the return of Dr. Annabelle Riggs. Just been a great series, just another fine issue, Jason Aaron, Al Ewing, and Kafu. Finally, I picked up Deadbeats, a musical horror anthology from A Wave Blue World, which was a Kickstarter, but check your local comic stores because it has found its way into the previews and in other places. Edited by Joe Corallo and Eric Palicki, our host for the series, the sort of envelope story, is the shopkeeper, proprietor of the Deadbeats record store, and the sign in the window says, "We buy CDs, vinyl, and souls." There's a wonderfully diverse roster of talent, including Sweetie Boo, Mags Visaggio, Vita Ayala, Rafer Roberts, Jen Hickman, and of course, Messrs. Corallo and Palicki. As you'd imagine, loads of different styles on display, but they all hang together. With favorites for me so far, Let's Stay Together by Raymond Salvador and Vita Ayala's. And then there's The Cursed Saxophone of Skosferatu by Matt Sumo. And we have Metronome by Lauren Renfremus Cooper. Caroline Autopsy on art, what a great name, and Taylor Esposito, whose lettering really becomes one of the standouts of the story. It's a metronome. You'll know why if you read it. Mm. I love the heck out of this.
That's I don't know how me. You managed to do it, Bob. You had 18 seconds left.
There you go.
I can't do a 5-minute lightning round to save my life.
How much time did I have left?
You were way over.
No!
Yeah, you were, dude. You were at least a couple minutes over. It's fine though. I hold it up for a second, but I don't hold the noise up to the microphone too much because A, I don't want to overpower you. B, nobody needs to listen to that. And I also don't want to get sued. So but you're good, whatever. The 5 minutes is basically just like a
suggestion.
Hey. Yeah. It's the wrap it up button, is what it is. But you do your thing. Everybody does their thing. I never abide by it. Why should any of you? All right. Sarah.
Hi.
I'm going to give you 10 whole minutes.
I don't need 10 minutes.
All right.
I did consider it. I was like, I could 100% do it. No, I won't.
Just happy you're here.
Aww.
Yo.
I feel the love in the room because you will in a minute.
Can you feel? All right. 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
Okay, I would like to open this week with one of the books that Joey mentioned in his potential best of a couple of episodes back, which is They Called Us Enemy by George Takei, Justin Isinger, Stephen Scott and Harmony Becker, published by Top Shelf Productions. I read They Called Us Enemy in one sitting, and listeners, I cried. I cried like a baby. This book opens the door on an often forgotten or deliberately forgotten chapter of American history, the incarceration in camps of Japanese Americans following the attack on Pearl Harbor. It's heartfelt and painfully truthful, but the book nonetheless tries to offer both sides of what happened, looking into the emotional and political reasons behind the camps, as well as giving an idea of the impact that the treatment had on both adults and children, with the ramifications of it lasting through Takei's life. This book should be required reading, not just because of the current political landscape we find ourselves living in, but also for those people who still claim that comics aren't really books, or that they're just about superheroes and the like. I totally agree with Joey as to this being one of the best books of 2019 so far. Now, in a very definite change of tone, I would like you to all do me a favour, lovely listeners. Take a moment now, if you will, to turn the lights down, light a candle or two, scented if you have them. Maybe put on a bit of Barry White in the background, because we're about to get a little bit sexy up in here. In the near future, space travel is ludicrously expensive and largely ignored. Enter Christine Ocampos, inventor of the Starshot teleportation device with a big idea. She'll travel to new worlds, engage intimately with local aliens, and film her exploits for a jaded Earth populace trying to find something new on the internet. Now, Chris and her merry band of scientists come porn stars explore the universe, each other, and the complexities of sex. A story about scientists having sex with aliens for the glory of mankind and money. This is Money Shot number one. From Tim Seeley, Sarah Beattie, Rebecca Isaacs, Kurt Michael Russell and Crank, and published by Vault. This is the single funniest book I remember reading since Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky had one of their main characters stealth pooping in Sex Criminals. which, sidebar, is apparently coming back for its concluding issues. I could make some kind of ejaculatory pun at this point, but I'm not going to. Back to the main event. Money Shot opens with a splash page of a sort of tousled haired lady with her spacesuit unzipped to below her navel saying, "I want you to fuck me, sexy fish man." Now, not only is that one of the greatest opening lines since Dickens wrote "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times," but said lady scientist looks real. She does not have magically pert boobs. She has a little bit of a belly roll. There are creases at the top of her thighs. Now, we talk a lot on this show about how representation is important, and I cannot express enough how happy I am that the people in this book look like actual real people. They have wobbly bits. One of them makes a comment about like trying to get a good angle so that her boobs don't look like jelly. It's amazing. Anywho, back to the book. We get an amazing scene of Ocampo directing her co-stars, along with some friendly banter between them, and a nice subtle message about safe sex, which also manages to call a condom a tuna wrap. And then we get a flashback to find out how we got here. I'm not going to give too much more away, because seriously, you need to read Money Shot. It is hilarious. It is beautifully drawn. The plot actually makes sense. But suffice to say, there is a biochemist called Dr. Koch, spelled K-O-C-H, who is trying to make kale palatable. That's a whole other joke. Anyway, Dr. Koch insists on having a porn star name, Supermassive Black Hole, even though, and Ocampo points this out, his name is literally Dr. Koch. Anyway, I'm going to stop repeatedly saying the word cock and move on to my next book, which is Oh Joy Sex Toy, Volume 1, from Erica Mohn, Matthew Nolan, and it's printed by Limerence, which is an imprint of Oni Press. I remember Steve talking about this book many, many moons ago, so I picked it up using a voucher that my former colleagues kindly gave me, because this is not a cheap book. they gave me this shopping voucher and they were like, buy yourself something nice. So I bought Oh Joy Sex Toy and a book that I will be talking about on a future episode called Fruit of Knowledge, which is literally just a comic book about vaginas and menstruation. And it's amazing. And it has this whole thing about how men are scared of women's genitals. Anyway.
Hold on. I want you to know that I appreciate that that's what you use that gift card for. That is some devious shit. That is real good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I thought it was quite reasonable. I'm pretty sure they thought I was going to buy like a nice jumper or something. Nope. Dirty books.
Oprah's book of the week.
So, yeah, Oh Joy Sex Toy is not a cheap book. It's like $30, but that isn't a complaint because it is a big book. There is, I'm trying not to use the word girth. It is a hefty tome. I have been, I'm sorry, I'm just being
your my favorite now. Today.
I have barely managed to skim the surface of this. I was reading this on the train yesterday on my way home. And oh boy, this is not a book I should be reading in public. From what I've read so far, it's an intelligent, insightful, thoughtful book that I'm going to be honest, some people I've known in my life could do with reading a bit more of this. no doubt I will be talking about this online once I've had more of a chance to get into it. But I love the art style. It's really sweetly drawn. I don't know if Erica Mohn is actually called Erica Mohn or if I'm pronouncing her name wrong, but seriously, that's an amazing name for someone who's writing Oh Joy Sex Toy. And I'm going to stop now because I'm just being filthy at this point.
Do you know that there's a volume two?
I do know there's a volume okay. two. It's on my wish list for Christmas.
Like you were saying, I mean, I will also point out when I read it back in the day, it's a very intelligent book. It's very educational. It takes a humorous approach to this stuff, but only after it's given you the proper information about what you're reading about. And I thought it was really good. I thought it was very well presented and I had fun reading it. I don't know if I bought the second volume. I'll have to check. I might have. Anyway. Good job, Sarah.
No worries. Did anyone else read Money Shot? Please tell me other people read Money Shot.
Money Shot
it was so funny.
So funny and so wonderful. I remember I opened the first page of that and I said, oh, it's that kind of book. Because I didn't know. I didn't know what it was going to be. You know, I just saw that people were reading it. And I was like, okay, I'll read Money Shot. Okay, Money Shot, the title leads me to believe. And then it was like that. And I was like, oh, okay. But then the great thing about the book is that the reasons for why they've gone on to this, that made this move in their career is... also just so smart and so like wonderfully hilarious. Super massive black hole. Yeah, I don't even there's a character at the end of the book where they're like, we have to go meet that guy, and the way that he is illustrated in his meditative stance is very graphic. there's a huge thing in that panel.
It's amazingly supportive, though. Amazing. I was not expecting that level of support.
Unexpected. I had no idea what I was in for this book, and it was a lot. And
I like that the little wisps of magic that are flying around him look like you know. Yeah, this I've been following Sarah Beatty online for a while. She is vicious and hysterical. And when I heard that she was writing this, because you've been hyping this book up for a while. Did you not read this a few weeks ago, Sarah? This was
No. There was an advert for it in the book of another of another book. And I normally whinge about when there's too many adverts. But this was just like, I was like, seriously, scientists having sex with aliens so that they can afford to science more. I am in. And yeah, I'm really, really, really glad that I picked it up, because I did read another book by Tim Seeley, which I will mention later when we get to one of our questions. So I kind of keep an eye on what he does, because I think he's an absolutely super writer. I just can't get over how funny it is. And the art is amazing as well, given that at one point there is somebody dressed as Godzilla with a massive strap on. Do you need anything else to make you read this book? Godzilla with a strap on. Come on.
I think you've done a fine job of baiting everybody into this book, I would imagine. It was a good time. I was excited to see it on the list after you had talked it up. I remember you talking about it. Okay. That's amazing. Does anybody else have anything for Sarah's lightning round, or for Bob's lightning round for that matter? I forgot to ask.
Thank you for reading They Called Us Enemy.
Oh, God, it was so good.
So good.
It's here sitting in front of me. I took it from the library.
Oh, man, get on that. Okay.
And also, you'll be pleased to know Barry the Lead got delivered for me today as well, Joey.
Oh, boy.
The lovely Bronwyn sent me an Amazon voucher for my birthday, and I put it to very good use buying comics and books.
Nice.
So yeah, I thought so. She's a good lady.
Yes, she is.
But yeah, Amazon randomly decided they were going to deliver a book to me on a Sunday. So I was like, oh, okay. That's Monday night sorted.
That Deadbeats anthology sounds amazing, Bob.
Yeah, it is. Again, as with all anthologies, a lot of different styles, but the linking in the way the old Tales from the Crypt is, in this case, you have a shopkeeper. Was a very interesting character in and of itself, but it is stories about the store, about bands, about all sorts of cursed objects that reside in her base, the shopkeeper's, the basement of the store, whatever. Really well done, really well put together. I missed the Kickstarter, didn't find out till it was basically closed. And the publisher was at New York Comic Con, but they didn't have any books. The book only came out the 16th, so they were having prints signed or whatever. But around here, both Escape Pod had the book, but Fourth World had an event, and they had a signing. So got up there and got it signed and such as well, and it is a lot of fun. If you check with your local comics shop, they could even be boosters of the Kickstarter, or they bought it through Diamond previews and such, so it could be worth checking out. It was a lot of fun.
Very cool. Alrighty, I guess it's my turn then. All right. I'm going to put a spoiler warning out for my lightning round super quick. I'm going to be talking an awful lot about Aquaman. So specifically issues 51 through the annual that Bob talked about earlier. So if you're looking to not get spoiled for Aquaman, you might want to tune out for the next couple minutes, because I'm going to rattle on about some things because I really, 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 really love this book. Okay. I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock. Go Aquaman 51 to annual number 2, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Robson Rocha and Eduardo Pansica. I think that's how you say that. Inks by Daniel Henriquez and Julio Ferreira, and colors by Sonny Go. All right, so for as long as I can remember, I've always loved hearing horror stories from the high seas. The old sea captain who's got a tale to tell, how the beast leapt out of the black waters and took half his crew, all that stuff. For several years, I've talked about this on the show before, I grew up spending every weekend at my parents' friend John's beach house. And he had the entire Jacques Cousteau collection and all kinds of like maritime stuff all over the house. And I would always sit on the big couch in the mudroom watching Planet of the Apes and the Addams Family and the Monsters and stuff and thumbing through the volumes. So I really love the idea that the ocean floor is like an alien world that we'll never be able to fully explore because of like limitations of science and stuff. The pressure would get to us before we could get to the bottom. But just what the hell is down there? Anyway,
more people have been to the moon than have seen the Titanic.
I'm just saying, like, what hasn't bothered to come up to the surface in thousands of years that's just been living down there, couldn't be bothered with us, but like one day just decided to be like, oh, I'm going to go up for some air, and just changes the whole world. Anyway, the Aquaman arc that I read begins with a story about a drunken sea captain who crashes his ship, killing everyone aboard save for himself. After building a lighthouse where he can live in solitude, a giant beast rises from the ocean to claim him, or so we've been led to believe. Dun, 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 dun. For me, the story of the sea captain and the beast created this looming sense of dread throughout the entire arc. It left something in the air for me that was very unsettling and ominous. Okay, so going through some of the quick hits of these issues really quick. From there, we find Arthur returning to Amnesty Bay. He's got the sea gods he met in the last arc in tow. Some people in Amnesty Bay are like, get off my lawn, which creates this amazing immigration subplot that's really powerful at times. Aqualad shows up. He's awesome, and he's eager to be Aquaman's apprentice. Meanwhile, Mera is pregnant with hers and Arthur's child, and she's getting pressure to marry from the oceanic mucky mucks. Meanwhile, Arthur is repairing the old lighthouse so the ocean gods can live in it. Then, one of the most terrifying creatures that I've ever seen in a comic book shows up, and I was like, whoa! I was sitting there, I was on the bed, reading with Bronwyn, dead quiet. All of a sudden, I just go, holy shit! Like, I flipped out at this. Oh, yeah, Black Manta's coming. He's bringing an old friend along for the ride. It's kind of weird. We'll get into it in a bit. So, yeah, the pacing of the storytelling is absolutely amazing. There is no subplot that outstays its welcome, and I'm 100% engaged with everything that's going on all the time. Did I mention the creature? Holy shit! Spoilers about the sea captain. He's been alive the whole time. We don't know how, but there he is. He talks about being able to see monsters his whole life and how the bottle was the only thing that would help drive them away. Thus, he becomes an alcoholic. Alcoholism / monsters. Booze keeps the monsters away. I can't help but feel like this is related to, she's spoken with us openly about it before on the show, Kelly Sue's own experience with alcoholism. I love that this is a part of the story. Reading this feels like I'm witnessing one of my favorite creators, and if I may, one of our friends, exercising demons by pouring all of it onto the page. And I just, it's a small part of the book, but knowing her the way that we know her, it struck me as really, really powerful. My father was an alcoholic growing up, so I have that attachment to it too. Anyway, it hit me really hard. It was wonderful. Black Manta. Okay, so who is the guy? Lex Luthor has like turned into some crazy like sci-fi fishman thing. I have no idea what's happened to him or what's going on, the state of Lex Luthor and the
it's
DC
shenanigans. It's you're the villain shenanigans.
Yeah, but he's got like, he's got a cloak on.
Yeah.
He's got these like green glowing stripes all over his arms. He looks like a Atlantean god or something like that. So I have no idea what's going on with him. But anyway, he's chilling out with the Black Manta and he's like, hey, I'm going to give you a weapon that you could finally kill Arthur and all his friends. And so he takes Black Manta's father, like a coded version of the father's personality and memories and all these things, and puts it into this gigantic machine, like this kaiju yeah. Black Manta.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they have to learn to get along, and he has to come to grips with the idea that his dad is an AI system now. And because Black Manta is the way he is, he can't really handle it. So every time that the father or the machine goes against his orders, he does this like voice command override and reprograms the father and reprograms the machine. And just if you think about that for a second, that anytime one of your parents said something that you didn't like, that you could just stop time, change who they are so that they would be in agreement with you and just move on like nothing happened, that is so messed up. And I love that that's a part of this story, because it's wild and it's hurtful. And I never would have expected. I know it's Kelly Sue writing it, but I never would have expected to get this level of emotion out of an Aquaman book. And here it is with her version of this character. And it's just absolutely incredible. So I used all my minutes on that. I knew I was going to do that.
It's worth it, though, because it's an awesome book.
Yeah, I definitely have some other stuff to say about some other stuff I read. But, Bob, do you want to chime in really quick before I leave?
Yes. Aquaman? Aquaman, as Sarah said, is spectacular. It is awesome. The depths, no pun intended, of what's going on, how it affects Arthur. Kelly Sue's Mera is amazing. We're only getting her in little bits and pieces, but every one of them is special and impactful. She is smart and clever and powerful as leader and character. I've read Aquaman on and off, and literally on and off, for the better part of a half a century and never stuck with it for very long. I am completely engrossed in what's going on here. As long as Kelly Sue stays with Aquaman, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. I actually made a note about Mera, and this is going to be out of context, but Bob, the moment where she asks Vulko if her hair is okay.
Yes.
She says, how's my hair? I love that moment where, like, just a second ago, she's screaming and pointing and commanding and all these things, and then she just turns around. She's like, how's my hair? it's a really great moment when you read it in context. Trust me. All right. Do you guys mind if I talk about some other stuff real quick?
Go on, then.
All right. Here we go. Spider-Man Life Story, written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Mark Bagley. This six-issue series finds us dropping in on Peter Parker a decade at a time, from the 1960s all the way to the 2010s. Every issue places us in a different decade and at a different pivotal point in Spider-Man's career. In the 60s, we're watching Peter come to grips with the ongoing Vietnam War and struggling with the idea of using his powers to fight for his country. Cap's doing it. Even Flash Thompson is shipping off, so why not Peter? Certainly his abilities could be used for the better of the nation on the battlefield, but who and what is a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man that doesn't defend his own neighborhood? So with all of this weighing on his mind, Peter becomes tortured by indecision. It makes for a very compelling and emotional read. Outside of that first issue, we visit the time of Dr. Warren and how his secret cloning program sent a shockwave through Peter's life, as well as those he loves. There's aspects of the symbiote saga, how secret wars almost cost Peter his family. So many big moments in the character's career, all recreated and retold brilliantly in the six-issue series. Okay, a little gushing about Chip Zdarsky. Lately, especially the latter end of this year, I have been in awe of just Chip Zdarsky's ability to kind of reposition himself as a creator and shift gears, if you will. Like, for me, he really came onto the scene when he was the artist for Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky's Sex Criminals. And he came out as like this like creator clown type where like he's so funny and he's so engaging and everybody loves to laugh with Chip Zdarsky and he's so goofy and all these things. And all of that stuff is true. But then as time has gone on and he's kind of taken a little bit of a backseat with the sex criminal stuff and doing art, he's come out with these really, really powerful series, one of them being Invaders, which has been another fantastic effort of his this year. So I now have like Sex Criminal Zdarsky and then what I'm calling Golden Age Zdarsky or Silver, take your pick. And so all that same feel from the Invaders book that we've been reading, that vibe and that level of paying attention to the history and the lore and writing the characters as those characters, that is all here in this Spider-Man Life Story collection. This was incredibly cool. So like if you've been digging, if you dig Zdarsky kind of with his spectacles on in the library writing as opposed to writing at the party, this is a really good time. So yeah.
His Marvel 2-in-1 was excellent too. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I've heard so many good things about Spider-Man Life Stories. Like literally everyone I know that has read it has just said how absolutely brilliant it is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, looks like I'll be reading that before the end of the year then.
It's very Peter centric. There is Spider-Man stuff in there. But I mean, it's at least 70-30 Peter Spider-Man, if I was going to put it in mathematical terms. But it's just, I don't want to spoil anything because they touch on some really incredible moments throughout Spider-Man's career. I haven't read too much of the old school Spider-Man, so I don't know how much of this stuff is new as opposed to them just putting a different spin on it or what. But I mean, it was a roller coaster. And I liked watching Spider-Man age up as the decades would pass. So by the end of the book, he's an old man and you're watching him continue to be Spider-Man. His body's failing him. All of his friends have died. Like it's this crazy, crazy, crazy story. Anyway, Chip Zdarsky, number one. And then super quick, Bad Reception, number three. Please read Bad Reception. It's so damn good. Juan Do, his original book, just like I talked about with the first and second issues, this series just gets better and better with each one. People are dropping like flies. We've reached that part in the horror movie, in the slasher specifically, where like we've found a few bodies and now everybody knows what's going on and they're all freaking out. But you also have to keep in mind that a lot of people that are on the island, even though they're all supposed to be friends, they have like their own agendas.
Mm.
So now you're talking about characters that you thought were safe now killing because they can just pose as the killer and throw everybody off the scent. It's nuts. The artwork is absolutely fantastic. Even when you open up the first page, there is a character who is tripping on mushrooms and walking through a forest in the island looking for these dead man fingers mushrooms to eat. And the entire sky is just this kaleidoscope of color. And you kind of like see the beast for the first time or the thing that's been lurking around the island, but it's his version of it. And so because he's tripping out, it's all warped and like animalistic and it's just wild. It's absolutely wild. I love that book so much. So
it's awesome.
Did you read number three?
I haven't read number three yet, but I have read one and two, and I absolutely adore it. It's just so, so good and so different to anything else that's coming out at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's probably going to be next up on my to-read pile.
Awesome.
Because I'm very excited about finding out where it's going.
Juan Do followed me last night and oh, I am following him. So maybe I could talk to him about coming onto the show. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I may already have opened that conversation with him when we spoke to him. Juan Do was particularly lovely when we spoke to him and Carlos Gifoni, and they knew about our shows and they have listened to us.
So that's how I got the follow. It's your fault. That's awesome. Thank
Steve,
you.
Steve, I'm the cool kid, remember?
Yeah, I know. And just something to put a smile on Sarah's face. I hoped to have the fourth issue read by the time we got onto the podcast, but alas, I went back to the beginning. I read Sarah and the Royal Stars, numbers 1 through 3. Yeah, that series is wonderful as well. Absolutely gorgeous and extremely mythical, which I really, 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 really love. And a lead character that is just outstanding. So yeah, super, super good. I want to catch up with the fourth issue later tonight.
And it's beautiful. But
yeah, it's really
absolutely
good.
Absolutely beautiful. Also, speaking about books that we have both read and enjoyed, and harping back to the fact that I really have to go to Thought Bubble, Daniel Warren Johnson is one of the guests this year. You know who Daniel Warren Johnson is, don't you?
I'm terrible with names. Remind me.
Oh, Murder Falcon.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go. You should have just said the creator of Murder Falcon. I don't know names. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I know. Believe me, no one's disappointed in me than I am.
No, no. I'm just looking at all the people that are there. Oh, Mariko Tamaki's going to be there.
I was very happy to hear Murder Falcon come up on your list 2 weeks ago on the show when you were talking about end of the year stuff.
Yeah, it is just so, so good. And a few people have kind of sent me messages saying that they've read it off the back of both of us raving about it. And people are just like, this book is so good and it is not what you think it's going to be. And it goes places.
Yeah.
Boy, does it go places.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing about that book was as cool as all the like hardcore metal stuff was, and especially if you like that kind of music and you get the references and you're like, oh man, this is awesome, but then they just smack you with this underlying, like, this subplot that you're following throughout the whole series, and it just ends so beautifully. And I was in tears. That book is super, super powerful, super good.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, so good. End of the year, folks, it's coming.
All right. Let's see here. We don't have an open discussion book this week.
Well, we sort of discussed stuff. So
yeah, well, no, we did. We talked plenty of books for sure. Let's see. Let's go to some emails. Bob, would you like to read this email from James?
Sure. It is from James Stubbs. Thank you very much. He says, it's me, your resident librarian again. This one is for Bob and Steve, and a whole lot of love for The Creature. If you haven't read it yet, The Lady from the Black Lagoon by Mallory O'Meara is definitely worth a read. Her research into the life of Millicent Patrick, one of Disney's first female animators and the creator of The Creature, is in-depth and fascinating. It's even harder when you see how much of a raw deal she got and had all credit stolen from her. Ugh. Yeah, Universal, which it actually participated in photo shoots for, I believe it was Life magazine, where they'd show her in the room with the models and the mock-ups. Eventually, the credit for The Creature from Black Lagoon went to Bud Westmore, who was the fellow who took over after they fired unceremoniously Jack Pierce, who had created Frankenstein and the Frankenstein's monster and the Wolfman and everything else over the years. So Universal was very good at doing that, and they did it to poor Millicent Patrick. This book, by the way, I've been waiting for my library to get it, and they haven't. It comes out in paperback early next year. Right now, there are hardcover copies around at reduced prices from Amazon. It is already into my cart. So thank you, James, for reminding me of how I have to get onto this book. So there's that. So Millicent Patrick, watch yourself some Creature from the Black Lagoon, particularly the first one. If you're a fan of The Shape of Water, the second one's worth seeing, too. Revenge of the Creature, both of which were in 3D in their time, which is pretty bizarre.
Ooh.
Anyway, James has a follow-up question. Here we go. Since Hollywood seems to be falling all over themselves to snap up superhero and superhero-adjacent properties, you have to wonder how long it'll be before they realize there are some really good horror comics out there, too. If you had the rights, the cash, and the ear of the movie executives, name the one horror comic you'd put to film, and you can't pick Infidel, that one is mine, and would scare the crap out of thousands of people. I would agree. Joey?
Yeah.
You're the not scary movie guy. What do you got?
Well, it's funny because there were two that I was like, oh, you remember those books? Those would make great movies. One was House of Penance, which we read a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other one was Empty Man, both of which are or will be movies. So they made that House of Winchester movie with Helen Mirren, I think.
Yeah.
Which I don't think was good, but it wasn't directly based on the comic, but based on the story, same story, right? And Empty Man is going to be a movie in 2020. So that was awesome to see. I think that the other ones that my head immediately went to were Abbott. Winnebago Graveyard by Steve Niles, which I talked about a couple of years ago. That book weirded me out, and I would throw that one on the it's got everything, man. You get stuck out in the middle of nowhere, and then you end up in a creepy carnival. It's wild, gory ending. And we still need to see where it's going, but I think Something is Killing the Children also.
Ah, it's on my list.
Yeah.
Stole damn it.
Did you also say Gideon to see Falls?
Television series.
Because Gideon Falls is also on my list.
That's coming too.
No, it's not.
TV series. Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. See, it's like the question.
James Wan's producing the whole thing.
Oh, God. All right. Well, there's my list. Ice Cream Man. Whatever.
I interviewed Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino for it.
There you go.
I'd have had Abbott on my list too. It's one of those things where for me it's a blend of, if you remember Kolchak, the Night Stalker. So you throw that together with the blaxploitation vibe of the 70s, a sort of Shaft thing. Throw someone like Vivica Fox into that. We got ourselves a movie.
I thought you had more.
No, that's it.
All right. Sarah, what about you?
Okay, so I know he said one.
Yeah, I did. I did more than that too.
Okay, so first off, Clean Room from Gail Simone and John Davis Hunt. Because that terrifies me.
Another one on my list. Okay, thank you, people. Yeah, it's a great.
Okay, I won't do my next one then, because I know my next one will be on your list.
Okay.
One that I just thought of that I should have thought of earlier was House Amok by Christopher Sabella and Sean McManus. I thought of it because Joey mentioned Winnebago Graveyard, and this quite a lot of it is set with the family in their kind of minibus thing. I don't know if anyone else read House Amok, but basically
the first two issues.
Yeah, it's about a family who have this like shared delusion. And then one of the twin daughters kind of realizes that actually maybe it is a delusion, and that she's just kind of trapped with this insane family who are just going around murdering people. It's crazy. Anyway, but when I talked about Money Shot earlier, I said that I was going to mention Tim Seeley again. One book that I think massively went under the radar and that I would absolutely love to see made into a movie, because the book scared the living daylights out of me. Like, this was a book I had to read first thing in the morning before I went to work, so that I would have forgotten how terrifying it was by the time I went to bed. It's called Imaginary Fiends. It was by Tim Seeley and Stephen Molnar. And basically, I'm just going to read the blurb because I can't explain it. Polly Peach Pit. Those were the words 10-year-old Brink Cal said when she was found covered in her own blood by the woods in rural Cannon Falls. Her best friend, Melba, had just attempted to murder her because a spider girl named Polly Peach Pit told her to. Since that day, Melba has spent 7 years in a mental health facility. Tomorrow is her 18th birthday. Tomorrow, she'll be transferred to a federal prison. That is, until she receives a visit from FBI agent Virgil Crockett. Crockett explains that there is another world beyond ours, where hungry spectral aliens stalk the minds of the impressionable and the weak. These things, called interdimensional mental parasites, feed on compliance. They convince hosts to do things for them, and the more they feed, the stronger they become. More IMPs stream into the world each day, invisible to everyone but his or her hosts. Honestly, Joey, you could not read this book. It is genuinely terrifying. It's about children's imaginary friends but the imaginary friends are real and they're terrible. And Polly Peach Pit is this kind of giant spider thing that was a bit reminiscent of the other mother's real shape from Coraline.
Nice.
And then there is, I'm going to say that there is a cat. To call it a cat is being generous. It's terrifying. There is milking involved. It's like a five issue mini. Honestly, I think it was five, maybe six issues long, but it is about the weak-minded being ridden by these terrifying aliens. And when it goes into their world, there's a fight scene between two of them at one point. Oh my life. If somebody could make that into a movie, like, I wouldn't be able to go and see it because it would be too scary, but it would be amazing. So yeah, I've just raved for like 5 minutes, but if you haven't read Imaginary Fiends, please do. It was from Vertigo. And Tim Seeley does humor very well, but he also does horror incredibly well. Mm-hmm. And it's really scary. So there we go.
All right.
Steve, what's on your list?
So I know I just talked about it, but I would really love to see Bad Reception up on the screen. And yep. If I had to assign somebody to it, it would be Kari Joji Fukunaga. He did Maniac, and he's currently doing No Time to Die, which is the new Bond film. Just has the overall look that I think that I would want for that series. I also think a David Fincher's version of Kill or Be Killed would be absolutely incredible.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, man, that is definitely a horror book. It's a crime book, but it is also a horror book. There are demons.
It takes some turns.
Yeah, that series is nuts.
Do you remember that issue? It was like issue maybe 16 or whatever, and you get to the last page, and he looks at the girl, and she's, oh my god, she's got the, oh my god. You just turn in the pages and it's like, boom, right in your face. And she's like, what's wrong? And you're like,
I love both seasons of David Fincher's Mindhunter. And I think if he was handed Kill or Be Killed, he would just knock it out of the park. I also think the October Faction would be really cool.
I think that's been optioned.
Sure, I think you're right, actually.
Yeah.
It's really cliche to assign this person to this property, but I don't care. I would love Barry Sonnenfeld, who had a hand in doing the Addams Family, to do the October Faction. And last but not least, I would like to see Proof as a TV show. Proof is the FBI agent who gets teamed with the Sasquatch, and they travel the world fighting things like the Loch Ness Monster and Chupacabra and all of those, you know, animals or things of legend, if you will. What do you call them? Cryptozoological creatures. There you go.
Cryptids.
I think that would be a lot of fun. Kind of in the vein of like a Supernatural or Grimm or something like that. But maybe a little bit of a bigger budget. We'll see. And just really super quick, we watched it last night while we're talking about horror movies. If you haven't, Bob especially, if you can get your hands on the movie Crawl, the alligator movie.
Crawl is so good.
Yeah, dude. We watched it last night. It was great. It was good. Bob, have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, so super quick. Daughter goes to check on her father because the other sister is worried. And there's a Category 5 hurricane coming in. This takes place in Florida. And she basically is scouring his work, and then she goes to his house, and she finds that he is in the crawl space underneath the house, and he's been hurt. And so she's like trying to drag him out, and from out of nowhere, the stairs from the crawl space to the upstairs shatter, and a gigantic alligator comes flying through, and she realizes that she's trapped in the crawl space with her father, who has not woken up yet, and there is a giant alligator in the basement, so to speak. It is absolutely terrifying, especially when I'm sitting there considering that my sister and her family live in Florida, and I am not kidding, they have two alligators that live in the water behind their house. They actually have to have like gates. Everybody in their development has gates so that the alligators can't get through and up into the houses. So this Category 5 hurricane comes along and the water's coming up. It's coming up. And just more and more things from the swamps and everything are washing into this neighborhood. And it is positively terrifying. It focuses down on two leads who deliver phenomenal performances. And it takes a lot of turns. I loved it. It was so, so, so good.
I mean, there was a really, really terrible Toby Hooper movie way back called Eaten Alive or Legend of the Bayou or 1400 other titles, which actually has a very young Robert Englund, which has people running one of those terrible hotels in the swamp where they're kidnapping people and they have a big alligator that chases a little girl under the house.
Oh.
And it is such a fake alligator. It is such the stuffed thing you bought at a theme park in Florida and brought home with you. Mm-hmm. It's just not scary. It's not anything. And they are kind of creepy creatures with their own sort of little intelligence. So when you see the old Robert Forster alligator movie from back in 1980, it was really well done, forced perspective sort of stuff. Lake Placid a couple of years ago by David E. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of fun. So, yeah, I'm in. I would definitely take a shot at Crawl.
There was another one. I think it was called like Legend or something like that. That was another decent crocodile movie. But this was, they get messed up. Like, this is not just like we'll hide from the thing the whole time. It's pretty harrowing. I really enjoyed it. Bronwyn and I had a blast watching that last night. It's true. I'm going to read the books again.
Hey, wait a minute. I get to put some movies
Whoa. I thought you did. I thought you read yours already.
I didn't even start. It's just that people... I've already lost Abbott and Clean Room to our room. So I'm on for both of those. I love anthology movies. So Ice Cream Man, I think, would be a lot of fun to be able to do a recurring series of anthology movies with that conceit of the local cheery ice cream man serving out poison spiders and all that sort of stuff. Go with that.
No.
How about... Stepan Sheich's Death Vigil as directed by Sam Raimi.
Ooh.
Could you cross his horror vibe with some superhero-y stuff and you could have something epic.
Hmm.
Also, sidebar, you know Death Vigil 2 is coming.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
He is beginning as soon as Harleen is finishing up, which he's doing momentarily. Yes, Death Vigil 2 to begin work on, as well as Sunstone Volume 7. 2020 is going to be a big year for Stepan Sheich. Finally, my last pick for a movie would be Insects by Marguerite Bennett and Ariella Cristantina.
Which is the one I had on my list.
I didn't read out,
so I knew you'd have it.
It is Victorian era feminist forward body horror. So I'd love Ms. Bennett to write the screenplay and have this directed by, of course, Jen and Sylvia Soska.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Sarah.
I was looking at my shelves and I'm a big wimp, so I don't read a lot of horror, but I was like, yep, that's got to be on the list. No way. Bob will have that on his list.
Nice.
That was a very creepy book that sadly I don't think is going to come back. So fingers crossed, maybe one of these days. Maybe.
Pour one out. Never.
Yeah, I just was looking through the solicitations for January. I already warned my local comic book shop. I'm down to 3 DCs and 5 Marvels.
Oof.
Lost a lot of books.
Yeah.
It's been a rough year for that stuff.
For sure. Awesome. All right. Can I read the book list now?
No. Yes, you can. You may. We'll allow it.
Okay. Bob had Aquaman Annual number 2, Fearless number 4, Wonder Woman number 81, Valkyrie Jane Foster number 4, and Deadbeats Anthology. That is a Kickstarter joint. Joey talked about Punk Taco, Amazing Mary Jane number 1, Marauders number 1. Really loved Marauders. I also picked up Amazing Mary Jane, but I have yet to read it. Now I'm doubly excited. Sarah talked about They Call Us Enemy, original graphic novel. Money Shot, number 1, and Oh Joy, Sex Toy, Volume 1. I just looked in my collection, Sarah. I have volumes 1 through 3.
Ooh.
So there's plenty to go around. I talked about Aquaman number 51 to the annual 2, Spider-Man Life Story, that is all collected now in a trade paperback, Bad Reception number 3, and Sarah and the Royal Stars numbers 1 through 3 for a quick mention. And yeah, so we went through the emails. I believe we have a listener question left. We do.
Yes,
we do.
All right. Yep. Dominic wrote in, if you went to a school for creating comics, what would be your top 3 favorite classes? Subject names can be as vague or specific as you like. Okay. I am going to go first. So I would absolutely love to take some kind of a color theory course, something that explores the origins of colors, their meanings, which colors complement one another, so on and so forth. I love to, when I draw, I love to color and would just love to learn more about it. So that's a simple one. Superhero mechanics. This would basically be how to build a superhero that isn't overpowered and how to create a world where their powers work and make sense. All these things that all these creators have to take into consideration when writing superhero comics, I don't know that I would even know where to begin. So I would love to take a course on how to make all of that stuff work, how to mix the fantastic with the mundane, so to speak. And my last one would be Dialogue 101. Because while I can write the crap out of atmosphere and places and people, once they open their mouths, I fail miserably. That has always been my weakest thing, even like going all the way back to writing in college. A lot of my professors told me my characters are always so serious and that people don't really talk that way. And I used to be like, oh, what do you know? These are my characters. But now, like, I actually understand that I think my weakest part when I'm writing would be dialogue. But who knows? I've been reading comics for a long time, so maybe that's changed by now. But I would love to take a course that kind of directs you in having characters talk back and forth with one another and just how all of that chemistry works, what to cut from the conversations when it's not important to the story, that sort of thing. So those would be my 3 courses. Joey, what would you pick?
Smashing the Patriarchy, Comics for Young Readers.
Nice.
Using literal words for sound effects instead of sound effects. Like, you know, when you're reading books and it'll say like poop instead of like, you know, that kind of thing.
Sort of like assassination.
Yes, I was just thinking the same thing, Bob.
And friend of the pod, Kristen Gudsnuck does that all the time. Yes. You know, when it's like
swish.
Yeah, instead of like instead of like crash boom bang, it'll be like fall. You know, just like that's the quintessential. I need to perspective and memory in the graphic novel, the graphic memoir, the use of the medium to capture human recollection and truth. That's 3 classes. Also, my 4th class would be lettering.
Nice.
Just lettering.
Just lettering. Taught by Taylor Esposito or Clayton Cowles?
Caramanga.
Okay. Yeah.
No, it'd be Chris Eliopoulos, probably.
Ah.
A fine choice.
My top 3 classes at comic school. My first one would be called How to Stop Overthinking and Just Start Writing the Damn Thing. because I'm the worst. My next one would be called Naming Characters for Idiots, because I will write a script and I will have person 1 and person 2. And I'll be like, I'll come back later and give them names. Or everyone will be called Dave. That's the other option. Everybody gets called Dave.
That's cool.
So,
unless you're Dave.
Unless you're Dave, yeah. So that would be my second class. And my last one would be working with artists, editors, letterers, and others, comics as a collaborative process. Because I don't like sharing my toys.
Yes.
Which ones?
Hey. Keep it clean, huh?
Nobody
this whole podcast has not been clean. It's okay.
I have brought the filth this week, and I am proud of that fact.
Yes. Some of the episodes lately have been quite saucy. Thanks, Sarah.
No worries, buddy.
Those sound amazing. Bob?
I think I'm along the lines with Joey for the most part. Some giving context and some history to why. So the first one I thought of was, along the lines of Joey as well, Comics for Young Readers, Why They're Important for Everyone, and I Want It Taught by Joey Buccino.
Aww.
Yeah, wow. We'll dive into all sorts of kids and young adult books and showing how, you know, them reading imaginative works, it just burnishes their own creativity and the love of reading and such as that, and I think you'd be perfect for that, Joey.
I can teach all these classes. I just want to throw that out there.
Okay.
Character names, I got that.
Yeah. My second would be, and there might be some lucky people who get to actually take this. It is called The Politics of Comics, and it's taught by Professor Carolyn Coca.
Heck yes, it is.
Yeah, it could be starting up this spring at SUNY Old Westbury. Just saying. You can imagine how wonderful this is going to be. The course explores the art form and the politics of comics in terms of how they are produced and by whom, as well as the texts themselves and how they are perceived. Topics include imagination, religion, gender discrimination, feminist movements, racial discrimination, and civil rights movements, war and post-traumatic stress, disability and monstrousness, class and privilege and vigilantism, sexuality and gender, and adolescence and identity. Sold.
Wow.
Can you take that as an online class?
I don't know. You'll have to write to Carolyn, but...
asking for a friend.
Fingers crossed, perhaps that is for the spring at SUNY Old Westbury.
Have her send you, like, the syllabus and the course outline and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait.
Just do it in my own time.
Just do it, yes. Well, I'll check in with the teacher. Finally, how about Women in Comics, On the Pages and Behind Them, taught by Trina Robbins.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'd love to sit in her classroom forever. Bring her lots of apples, too.
All right, that's it. We have to pony our monies together and build a university for comics.
Yes.
Start making these classes. Those are awesome. Yay. Thank you so much for the question, Dominic. That was fun. All right. Can we do what books we're looking forward to next week?
Yeet.
Yes.
Joey, why don't you tell us what you're picking up?
None.
Really?
No, it's another
Excalibur.
Yeah, 100% Excalibur. It's going to be awesome. Excalibur number one. DC East number 6 of 6. Let's go. Sif-Sex number 2. Star Pig number 4 of 4. Also, I just want to say something here. DC is putting out another, like, fancy Joker miniseries. They have Harleen, they have the Harley Joker thing, and now Jeff Lemire's doing this Joker Killer Smile bit. What the hell, man? I'm over this. Get this out of here. Why is
Joker so hot right now?
And it's an oversized format, and it's like crazy expensive as well.
I'm sure. It's ridiculous, but I'm not reading it. I just wanted to just vent there a little bit. And the last Giant Days.
Yes, as time goes by.
Bob, what's on your list?
We also have, along with Giant Days, Invisible Woman number 4. I do believe Harleen number 2, which was pushed from last week to this one, is due out. And mm-hmm. Wonder Woman Annual number 3. And I might pick up Batman Annual number 4, but we'll see.
All right. Sarah, how about you?
I will also have Safe Sex number 2, obviously, because this is my running theme today.
Can't stop now.
Can't stop, won't stop. Giant Days as time goes by. Invisible Kingdom is coming back. Number 6 is going to kick off the second arc of Christian Ward and G. Willow Wilson's Invisible Kingdom. Very excited about that. I love that book. And I will also be picking up Excalibur number 1, even though I have not purchased an X book in I don't know how long. It's Excalibur. I have to. It's compulsory at this point. Captain Britain, yo. Captain Britain.
Fantastic. I have a bunch of repeats. Giant Days, Batman, Harleen, Excalibur. You know what? The only thing that I'm picking up that y'all are not picking up is Venom number 19. So there you go. All right. I think that's it. Does anybody have any closing statements or anything that they want to announce to the world?
Be safe trick-or-treating this year, crazy Halloweeners.
Hey, you said wiener.
You Halloweenies.
Keeping it on brand, Joey. Good work.
Yeah.
Bob, do you have anything?
Nope.
Sarah, you must have something.
Have I not been smutty enough? Do I also need to bring something else to it? I don't think I have got anything else, to be honest. I think I've twaddled on for long enough.
I don't like that word, twaddle.
Twaddle is an amazing word. I could have said I'd wittered on. Other than to just say again, if anyone does happen to have space in a vehicle going from the South Coast to Thought Bubble, hit me up. You know where I am. Let's talk.
And what's you're recording your ladies podcast, I think, next weekend?
We are indeed. We are going to be talking about Unicorn Store, which is a movie that premiered in 2017 at the Toronto Film Festival and kind of didn't really get any traction. And then it was released on Netflix in April of this year. It stars and is directed by Brie Larson, and it's also got Samuel L. Jackson in it.
It's so good.
Is all kinds of bat crap crazy. But this might be the first time where I know that we're going into recording a show and not everybody on the show loved the topic.
Get out of here.
What?
Who didn't like
just,
it?
I'm just saying that there may be one of my co-hosts who perhaps was not as enamored with the movie as I was when we watched it together. And I sat there crying my eyes out like a little baby at the end of it. Could be slightly controversial. As always, send us your questions, send us your comments. You can find us on social media at Valhalla Ladies. The email address is ladiesofvalhalla@gmail.com. But yeah, we will be going into all kinds of Unicorn Store based things, including but not limited to magic vacuums. Not a euphemism, folks. Not a euphemism.
I enjoy that movie a lot.
Me too.
Okay. I don't think I have anything to say other than, you know, if you went out this past weekend and you had your Halloween party, hope you had a good time. When Halloween comes this Thursday, be careful bringing the kids around and check their candy, all that stuff. You know what to do. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for reviews from our fantastic contributors. And please go and listen to Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, and of course, the Ladies of Valhalla podcasts. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email, bobreyer@talkingcomicbooks.com.
Joey?
@JoeyVercino.
Sarah?
@GeekCountryLady.
Oh, yeah. Jessica is @Jarska for all the things. I am @dead_anchoress. So for Bob?
They're coming to get you, Sarah.
For Sarah?
I'm never sleeping again.
Joey?
What a bunch of Halloweenies. I said it again.
Thank you so much for listening. Happy Halloween. We will catch you next week. So until the next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued.
Can I just interject with a random story?
You can tell your story and then you can go next.
Okay. I don't know if anybody else saw this news story, but like assassination basically came true. There was a guy in China, a businessman, who hired a hitman to kill his rival. And then that hitman hired another hitman who wasn't quite as good. And then he hired another one. And they went through like
It went through five hitmen until the last one basically tried to pay the supposed victim off to fake his own death. And then they all ended up in court, like the first guy and all five hitmen. It was amazing and it genuinely happened. And
I hope the someone has written this over to Erica.
Well, yeah, the creative crew were like on Twitter going, can we just point out we wrote this already? Can we copyright have the rights to the movie?
Yeah,
so that was just a sidebar, but I found that absolutely hilarious that somebody actually genuinely was like, I'm going to hire a hitman. Oh, that hitman's hired a not quite as good hitman, and he's done the same, which kind of makes me wonder, how many hitmen are there? Anyway,